Good afternoon, everyone. Allison Skaberg here, Consolidated Planning Group. We're grateful that you've taken the time to join us today. I always like to go through a couple of housekeeping items. Today's webinar is being recorded, so everybody is going to get a link to the recording and an email with a copy of today's slides, so you don't have to take notes on every single thing that you see. And you're going to be pleasantly surprised with these slides. They're really wonderful. I've had an opportunity to look through them, and I found them awesome. So we're here today with Sally Waterfield from Smart Family. She's going to tell us a little bit more about her organization and what they do. But today what we're talking about is growing up in a digital world, basically. And I know that this subject has been near and dear to my heart. I've had, you know, kids transitioning into adulthood with, you know, executive functioning deficits, frontal lobe issues, and things like that. And I would say that from my parenting hat, I would say that this is tough on a good day for anybody who has teenagers or middle schoolers or even elementary school. It's starting early. These kids are getting phones in kindergarten. It's tough for anybody in neurotypical kids, but when we throw into the mix some of our kids with disabilities, learning disabilities, frontal lobe, some of the executive functioning issues, it is just compounded. So I'm eager to hear more about this today. Consolidated Planning Group, if you guys are attending for the first time, we are certainly glad that you're here. There's some people that may be listening to us on podcasts, so this will be posted to podcasts later. And if anybody's listening to this on podcast and you'd like a copy of today's slides, just email us at contact@cpgcares.net. That's contact@cpgcares.net. Consolidated Planning Group is a holistic special needs financial planning firm. We help people plan for the future of their loved one with a disability. I am a parent to four and two with disabilities that have transitioned into adulthood. And I myself would say that the journey is tough. And so we do a lot of these webinars. These webinars were honestly born out of my own frustration of when we were transitioning into adulthood on why everything is so difficult. And I know this, I do this. This is what I eat, sleep, and breathe. And I just felt like everything was so challenging, and you have to be so careful not to mess something up accidentally. And so on our Consolidated Planning Group YouTube channel, you will find over 400 webinars on planning for a loved one with a disability. We've partnered with Temple Grandin. We partner with attorneys. We've got talks on what you need to know about SSI and Medicaid, special needs trust, guardianship, you name it, it is out there. And we've organized it in such a manner that you can search for the topic and for the step that you're on in your journey and find relevant content on that. And if you ever want a copy of the slides of a presentation that you've listened to on that YouTube channel, the Consolidated Planning Group YouTube channel, just let us know. We'll be happy to send you a copy of those slides. At CPG, we're an advisory and consulting firm, nationally certified as Social Security advisors and members of the Special Needs Planning Academy. So people come to us because they want to know, how much do I need to fund a special needs trust? Who's going to care for my child when I'm gone? What are options post high school for higher education, transition programs, residential living programs? There's a lot of reasons that people come, but whether you've done a lot of planning and you need a second look or a second opinion, or you need to pick up where you left off, or you would say, I'm embarrassed on what I haven't done. It doesn't matter where you are on the trail. We can help you. It's not about looking back. It is definitely about looking forward. So happy to help you any way that we can. So Sally, having said that, tell us a little bit more about Smart Families. I should mention, everybody, we can't see you or hear you, but we do want to know your questions. So if you have questions today, as we're going through this presentation, if you'll just throw those in the chat box, then we will get to as many questions as we can. Okay. And I'm going to go backwards here. There we go. So thanks, Sally.
Yeah, thank you, Allison. Hi, everybody. Thank you for coming, joining me for this webinar today. My name is Sally Waterfield, and I am the program director from Smart Families. So Smart Families is an organization. We are based in Houston. We are a nonprofit. And we collaborate with schools across Houston and from next year across Texas to provide an embedded prevention curriculum for schools to help them understand a little bit more about how technology is interacting with students, what's happening with families, and then we provide some really tangible solutions and strategies to help reconnect families. Prior to this role, I was actually a teacher in the classroom for 16 years, both in the UK, so I'm sure you can hear I'm not a native Texan, in the UK, and more recently, 6 years in a classroom here in Houston. It was very interesting for me as a teacher, watching just some trends and interesting things that were happening, not only with my parents of my students who were feeling very helpless and, you know, very scared about, you know, the behavior changes they were seeing in their children, but also with my students who were really struggling to focus. They were really struggling to like grasp concepts. I'd seen a lot of emotional changes, a lot of behavioral changes. And this wasn't just post-COVID. So I know a lot of people will talk about post-COVID, but this was kind of happening pre-COVID. But COVID was this perfect storm when we all started to see things, I guess, more glaringly obvious when the children came back on campus. And so I really wanted to understand what is it that's happening. And I really truly found technology was something that was affecting our children's brain development. And I was gifted this amazing opportunity to connect with a lady called Dr. Krista Collier. She is also in Houston. She's a neuroscientist, research educator, and she really was somebody who taught me a lot about what was happening with students. She studied the brain for many years. And she's on our advisory board at Smart Families. So we have some great neuroscience content that comes from her too. So that's Smart Families. I've left our mission up. We really want to help all families. We are so inclusive. Although we work predominantly with schools, we really do want to serve everybody. And so on our website, which there will be some information at the end of the presentation, you'll see there are lots of things on there that anybody can access. And we believe that it isn't one family that can do it by themselves. We want all families to band together to really create that cultural change that we really want to see. And it's very interesting because it's all over the media right now. There was, I'll talk a little bit about a book that was released. The Surgeon General said made a statement last week about social media. So it's very exciting at our organization right now because we're like, oh, people are taking notes. So that was just a little bit about our mission.
Sally, because we may have some head of schools, special schools, other school, you know, administrators mm-hmm. listening in today, just real quickly, I know you have a website and everything, but how do they engage your services if they wanted to bring you into their school and things like that?
Yeah, so initially people can go and look on our website and see what kind of content it is, what we kind of do with the school. That's www.smart-families.org. At the end of this presentation, I'm going to leave my email and then people are free to reach out and contact me. We have been onboarding new schools. You know, there is a process that we go through, but definitely an initial conversation is very welcome. We would love to share, and I would love to share more about what we do with our organization because we are very unique. We have been told by, you know, we've been talking with even policy advisors with Governor Abbott this week. We're very unique in what we're doing with schools. So yes, absolutely welcome that contact. Please feel free to contact me at the end. Okay, so the first part of my presentation, I'm going to talk a little bit about brain development. And I just want to really give a very general overview of brain development. I know that our children's brains are so unique. Children's brains develop in their own unique way. There may be some challenges that some children do have. However, what I really want to hone in on in the second part of this presentation is that these tech companies, these app developers, these platforms, they have very, very little disregard. They have a lot of disregard, for this, that some children may be more vulnerable, be more susceptible to online harms. And there's very, very little moderation on how we protect that demographic of especially children who are accessing and using their platforms. So today I'm going to talk more specifically about two parts of the brain. So the frontal lobe and the limbic system. And as the presentation continues, it's very interesting to see the interaction between these two. And this is something that I go into schools and talk to children about because I know as a teacher, I have never taught my students about the brain. It's so fascinating. And even as an educator, it wasn't until an in-service training that I started learning a lot about the brain and brain development. And when you know the science behind some of the reasons, people have that gut feeling that it's just this isn't right. You know, we have those conversations. I had those conversations with the parents of my students. Something isn't right here. I don't like how this is changing. And then when you learn the science behind it and through brain development, it just gives you a very interesting perspective on, you know, just the dangers that these children are facing online. So the next one. So early brain development, brains are built from the bottom up. There's a really wonderful doctor called Dr. Dan Siegel. He has a book called The Whole-Brained Child. And he really goes through a lot of this very early brain development. And in the first 3 years of a child's life is this amazing amount of growth and development for a child's brain. So it grows so quickly. And a lot of what we do and what we pour into these children is really very, very important and how the brain will continue to grow. So, and I've put here, you know, by age of five, 90% of the growth has already happened. So that's not necessarily the parts maturing, but the growth is already there by age five, which is really incredible. So moving on to adolescent brain development.
Can I ask a question really quick on the,
absolutely.
Was that the whole brain child?
Child.
Okay, I'll put that in the
yes.
chat box. Thank you.
Yeah, it's Dr. Dan Siegel, and he really has explained a lot of very complex brain science in a really digestible way. And a lot of what he does, parents have adapted to be able to speak to their children. And also my school where I worked, they also looked at that book as a teacher book study. So there's another idea how kind of that book can also be utilized if there is anybody who works in education here too. So there is going to be, so there's this initial early growth, birth to three. And then scientists discovered that something really incredible was happening to the adolescent brain. And when we talk about the adolescent brain, so the teenage brain, it's really important for us to understand that it's a very unique kind of brain. So we can't say it's an older child brain and we can't say it's a younger adult brain. The adolescent brain is a very unique brain all by itself. And things happen at this time period that, you know, it just excels during this season of a child's life. So this, how I talked about brain development goes from bottom to top. It also develops from back to front. And so, you know, on a personal note, I'm also a mum to three children. I have a 13-year-old, a 12-year-old, and a 9-year-old. And I'm seeing these things with my teenage sons. So this is when you might start to see some of those behavior changes and definitely a stronger tendency to kind of gravitate towards more risk-taking behaviors. And there's a reason for that, which I'll come back to in a second. And that's those different parts of the brain that are developing at different stages. So this is an adolescent brain. So I really welcome you as I continue through the rest of the presentation to, you know, really understand that it's a very unique brain that we're talking about. So UNICEF did some research a few years ago in this adolescent brain development region. The reason being is that researchers always believe that the experiences that a child had between birth and three almost, you know, confirmed the rest of the brain development for the child's life. And so this was believed for a large period of time. And then what researchers actually discovered that in adolescence, there's this other intense restructuring of the brain. So here I've put between the ages of about 9 and 14. And they call this a second window of opportunity. Now, again, what we pour into a child's life during this window of opportunity is so integral. And so it isn't necessarily that a child who has maybe experienced a lot of trauma in the first few years of their life, their brain isn't hardwired, you know, to just remain as it was then, that actually children's brains can restructure and rewire themselves during adolescence that can help give them more opportunities for growth. So interestingly, you know, this is all about kind of digital and smartphones and technology. 9 and 14, so this second window opportunity, you know, what is this? This is when we see parents giving their child the first smartphone. And Alison is absolutely correct. We are seeing younger students with smartphones, but my hope is that with just the education that's happening across the world right now, that this is something that parents will really reconsider. But nap between the ages of 9 and 14 is typical of when we would give a child a smartphone. A huge time we hear is from kind of elementary school through to middle school. That's when parents feel that their child is getting more independent, so they need their smartphone, so they're able to track them and find them. So just important as we start to really unpick some of the experiences that these children do have online, and then consider that all this rewiring and restructuring is happening, and how pivotal it is that we really safeguard our children in this age. Okay, so back to the two parts of the brain I mentioned earlier. So on the next slide, you will see the two parts that I specifically talked about. So if I can move to the next, thank you. And then if you click, okay, the limbic system. So I love talking about these two parts of the brain with the students, especially. So the limbic system, now this part of the brain, sometimes people call this the feeling brain. And so this is all like the emotional brain. And for an adolescent brain, if this looks good, feels good, sounds good, the limbic system is almost like the accelerator pedal. And this is a Dr. Collier phrase that she will share in her presentations. This is the gas pedal. So if it looks interesting, fun, an adolescent brain is more likely to say, go do it, let's do this. And this is the part of the brain that can often do things and take these risks and online risks without the child really fully thinking through the consequences. So this is fully mature around 11 or 12 years old. And so, again, think about when a child will typically get their own device, be given more responsibility or independence with it. So 11 or 12, this part of the brain that says, go do it, this is going to be such a good idea, is fully developed. Now, here we have the prefrontal cortex. Now, this part of the brain is found kind of above the eyebrows, at the top of the forehead. This part of the brain is, think of it like the brake pedal. This part is, hang on a second, this is the thinking brain. Is this a good idea? Am I going to get in trouble if I do this? Is there a consequence? Am I going to get hurt? Is somebody else going to get hurt? Now, this part of the brain, and this is so fascinating, and the children love this fact, this part of the brain is fully developed at 25. So we have this gas pedal, the one that says, do it, it looks so exciting and fun, about 11 or 12 years old. And then the part that catches up and says, should we actually really be doing this, is 25 years old. So you can see there's a huge mismatch here, and a lot of learning and growth needs to happen, structured and supported by adult involvement, just to make sure that child stays on the healthiest track. So on the next slide.
I actually have a question on this whole limbic system. When you were talking about 11 or 12, mm-hmm. when we have kids that have, for instance, ADHD or autism mm-hmm. or other kind of disorders or learning disabilities, some of our kids, I've read lots of studies that they may be, from a maturity perspective, they may be 2 to 4 years behind their peers when it comes to some of this development. So as far as some of these poor decision-making things that you may be seeing, maybe I'm just putting all my cards on the table here, like we struggled through this, like this was a this was a real struggle, and I would imagine that some of the people are here because it's been a real struggle at your house too. We were years behind, so you would think, and so I don't know, what would you say about that?
Well, on the next slide, I was actually going to just touch on that exact thing, Alison, because like, as I say at the beginning, this is just a general overview of brain development, and children's brains are absolutely developing in their own unique ways. And so when we think about the prefrontal cortex, and maybe there are instances where, parents are seeing behaviors that, like a few years behind what maybe would be seen in typical children the same age. One of the things that I heard a lot from my parents as a teacher with my students is really when we consider these executive function skills, and this has been a word that a lot of people have been talking about the last few years. So these executive function skills, these are found in the prefrontal cortex. And so these are like the highest cognitive and emotional control networks. And so remember, these are going to be fully developed around 25. That's when researchers typically would say. But what's kind of been happening now and what we're seeing more and more of is the scientific term is, they would say, it's like arrested development. So that is where a child is experiencing those delays. So on the screen, you can see I've kind of separated them into kind of list of executive function skills that you would typically see birth, middle, elementary school, and then the ones that you would expect to see more of in middle high school. But all of these are shifting. So it's, you know, some of these ones in middle and high school are actually kind of being more arrested in with the development consideration, and they're becoming more into the birth and elementary middle school. I was seeing this in my classroom. I was recognizing that a lot of what my students were struggling with was being able to like master and use these executive function skills. And so it's just kind of, I guess, a hot topic right now. Lots of people are talking about this. And, you know, children aren't born with these. They're born with the capacity to develop these. And so it's having them modeled, you know, having the opportunity to be able to practice using them. They're the things that will grow those stronger networks to make, and I know in Houston especially, there are even places that have started organizations who specifically will coach executive function skills. So these are kind of coaches, not just for the academics now, but people are really starting to see that this is something that children are not, you know, are struggling with. And a component of that from smart families is, you know, we recognize that technology, the amount of time children are spending on technology is definitely one of the components to why children are not being able to develop these in the way that, you know, we may have seen in the past. You know, I often say that these list of skills in the birth, elementary, middle, you know, these are the skills that you really want children to learn to be able to like put their shoes on in the morning, you know, be able to get out of the house and remember the homework. But the ones in middle high school, like they're the ones, you know, that children really have to learn to help themselves become more independent in the world. And so, yes, it's definitely an area. And, you know, I personally see an interaction between technology and, you know, children developing these skills. If that does that answer your question,
yes,
Alison?
And I'm just looking at that list, the birth, elementary, middle, like thinking about task initiation, working memory, organization, planning, and prioritizing. I also lead the support group for ADHD parents, for kids with ADHD. And a lot of our kids struggle in those areas, you know, where like a parent might say, well, I'm having to sit with them to do their homework, and they're way past the age that I should be doing that with some of these kids with the executive functioning and things. But that, to me, that is a sign that if they're struggling in some of those areas, that they really may not be able to handle the power in their hand with a phone. That if they're struggling on some of those daily tasks that they're doing all, you know, all the time. And, you know, like I said, it was an ongoing issue for sure, but that's interesting.
And especially things like impulse control, you know, what we hear a lot of with our organization is these children on platforms like Discord, maybe they're in the chat room in a Fortnite, you know, like setting, and these children say things that get back to parents who are, you know, think, oh my gosh, my child would never have said that. But, you know, in a setting, there's definitely a culture of trash talking online in gaming situations, especially. And so with these executive function skills, you know, still developing, children don't always have the impulse control to not be part of this bigger culture online, and then may find themselves in situations. And we see that, unfortunately, a lot, you know, in where we kind of work. And that's what parents report back to us, that these children are saying these things and doing these things. And you know, a lot of it, what we recognize is this executive functioning as well. So just, you know, really.
I do have a quick question, because one of the things that we had to do, like we really had to lock the phone down. We had all these sites and apps blocked. I mean, it was a job, like it was tough. And these, you know, little things that look harmless that are harmful. It's like, so do you guys do any education? I know we've had I think Crime Stoppers of Houston did some education on some of these apps and stuff that that you may want to lock the phone down and block and things like that. Do you guys do any of that?
We do. And so we go all within different schools and we hear, I'm also a parent. I know my children tell me things and, they're almost like my insiders because my children will tell me a lot of what they're hearing and, friends are maybe playing. But yes, we recognize part of one of our roles is to support parents, in one educating, but then also offering some kind of help and structure to, safeguard children. So a colleague of mine, he hosts regular webinars where he will share how to lock down certain things on devices. We have information about, alternatives to smartphones. There are some amazing alternatives now. They're called dumb phones. Bark, which I know you just mentioned, they have their own phone now, not just the software. There's all different kinds of things. So yes, one of the things that we also do is we help with that. And we also host monthly webinars, and we touch on the topics that we hear are most prevalent. So we, next upcoming year, we're going to be talking about peer pressure. We're going to be talking about gaming. We're going to talk about AI, because these are all the things that parents are having to kind of face right now. So yes, we want to help support
I
as
am a
much as we
huge fan of Bark. She said it quickly, but Bark, if you don't know about Bark, you should know about Bark. And they have a Facebook group. I'm looking that up. I think it's
Yes.
Parents in a Digital World, I think is what it is.
And I will also, if any parents do kind of venture onto that Facebook group, because I'm part of that group too, it can be extremely scary reading some of these, it's all personal testimonies of people who are walking through things. It's educational. Like I learn a lot from, hearing what children are doing on there, but also just, be mindful and give yourself grace that sometimes it can be, it can, and I felt it myself, it can kind of overwhelming, like, oh my gosh, I want to wrap my kids up and never let them go, like never let
Right.
them have technology. But it's just about finding a balance and having that, open conversation with children. We often encourage parents to like sit and game with the children if that's what you need to do, like learn what it is that they're doing on there, like what is their avatar, what is this space that they're using? Kind of invite yourself into their world, and then you become that safe space for a child to land who's going to share with you, like, oh, somebody's sent this, or, I don't know what this means. And that's what a lot of what we do for smart families is we're not just smartphones. We're all about just whatever we can do to support families connect reconnecting with each other. Oh, and I just saw, a dumb phone is a new concept of a phone. It's an interesting to call it a dumb phone. I would rather it be a basic phone. It's a phone that's stripped back, and different phones offer different kind of I guess things that you can do on them. I guess these tech companies have listened. Children, parents want to be able to track their child. Parents want to be able to text their child, and so there are different dumb phones. And if anybody wants to reach out to me at the end, I know my email is at the end, I can share some of these sites with you and different phones that are. But yeah, the concept is that for those parents who really feel like their child does need a phone, at Smart Families, we are in line with, a smartphone is for children, after, well, delay as much as you can, but definitely after middle school, especially because of this window of opportunity, with children's brains are developing so rapidly. And, it's so important that we safeguard them then. But yes, a dumb phone or a basic phone can just be an alternative to a smartphone. They often don't have access to the internet in the same way. You can actually set limits. You can make sure they can't access things. And Apple do have their own kind of screen time. But unfortunately, I mean, it takes a quick search on YouTube to find videos and videos of kids who are sharing with other kids how you get around certain devices. So the Bark phone is incredible because that is kind of super locked, and there's not a lot of loopholes around them. But children being children, this limbic system that's kind of pushing them to go, they will try and find ways. And when I go into schools, these students are very, very forthcoming with telling me how, they learn about VPNs to overcome something. And so, yeah, so smartphones, not necessarily a replacement, it depends. And some people may be on this call whose children have a smartphone, and that's totally okay. I mean, we would just direct you towards the software that you can put onto a device that helps you know, safeguard a child. There are some technologies that will totally block things. There are some things that will actually screenshot their phone screen and send it to you, and then you can read and see what it is that's been kind of flagged as a concern. But there's definitely movement now with tech industries starting to develop alternatives to maybe not replacements, but alternatives. And maybe we want parents to train their children to use devices. I mean, that's something that we really rarely see now, is the training part. So yeah, sorry, I went off on a little bit of a tangent, but yes, Smart Families is definitely a place we can help with that.
I honestly, I feel like I could have my MBA in this stuff. I found that the iPhone is easier to lock down than an Android, that there is a lot more risk in the Android than there was the iPhone. And I found, in order to lock down, and there's, I'm sure there's hacks, but they can't have their iCloud password. It needs to be changed. If they have their iCloud password, all of the work that you do to lock things down and block things, they can fix that. So those were some of my takeaways. And I have studied and looked, as, because you don't want to take it away to where they're like weird because they're the kid that doesn't have a phone because their parents are crazy. You want to teach them, like you said, you don't want them not to have it, but you need them to be safe. And a lot of our kids just simply aren't safe. And it was such a challenge. But Bark was awesome. I love Bark. That's like, whenever my kids were coming through, they didn't have that phone yet. So that I would have bought it. It was awesome.
And I have a Bark phone. We love the Bark phone.
I'm sure it's awesome.
Yeah.
And then parenting in a tech world is the Bark Facebook group, and I do think that that is a good group to join. So we do have a question. It says, do the brains of people with developmental disabilities mature at a rate of those with DD? If there is a slower rate of brain development, is that why our population struggles so much?
So I will, you know, this is not kind of, I am giving a very generalized, and so any kind of more specific questions with regards to kind of brain development, I would love to be able to provide that kind of information, having, you know, researched and spoken to other people. We have, like I say, Dr. Collier is on our board. She's probably someone who is more qualified to answer more specifically that question. Like, I love the question. I just don't want to put myself in a position of maybe saying anything, you know, without having researched it myself. I'm always, you know, I like to make sure that what I'm saying is, you know, accurate and true. But I guess what I do recognize is the uniqueness of children's brains. And, you know, having been in a classroom with students of all different abilities. So in the UK, you know, I was teaching students who did have kind of IEP, like everybody was in my classroom. There was no kind of separation. So I could see myself that there was different brains were developing at different stages and different kind of rates. So if it would be okay, I would love, if that person who asked the question would connect with me directly, I would love to be able to answer that properly.
I love that. And then what I would say too is that we work with clients with all ages of a loved one with a disability. And what I hear, I probably should do a webinar with them, you know, when they have one that's, you know, 31 or 34, what they were seeing at 16, 17, 20 is not at all where their child is now. So they say, well, gosh, if you would have talked to me when they were 16 or 17, I would have thought our situation is hopeless, or I would have not been very encouraged. And the growth and the development that happened. So I use the term that sometimes we're late to the party, but we get there. Mm-hmm. And so they would say that too, is that, hey, you know, we're often late to the party, but we did get there, and we're light years from where we were. And at a time that we didn't think was very hopeful. There's the best is yet to come is basically the story that I hear a lot of our families with kids with disabilities.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that makes, you know, my heart happy than anything is, you know, seeing parents always striving to help and, you know, find the best resources and support the children in the best ways that they can. And, you know, asking those questions, you know, I think sometimes technology can Even though it's amazing and it has its place in the world, it can almost disconnect people even further. And especially, we hear of families who, children will share with me that they're all like they're sitting in the, in the lounge with their parents, but everybody's looking at a device, and so they're so disconnected, yet, in the same room as each other. So I think we just want to highlight how important, connection is between parents and children, and always striving, just to help to be their person through everything. So on the screen, this was just so you'll notice I put a lot of writing and things on my slides, and that is because I'm a more is more kind of person, and I love printing out slides and like keeping them for reference. So that's why I've kind of put a bit more writing on each of my slides. But this was just to show you that developmental mismatch. That's what the researchers have called it. And at the bottom, you'll see there's a little link to a video which you can watch in your own time. There's some really lovely videos that Dr. Dan Siegel, who I mentioned previously, he has done really great animations to show you truly these different brain parts maturing at different stages. But this for me was the clearest one: emotion versus control. We've got this between 15 and 25. This is this time where, children are more inclined, and we do see that they engage in more risky behaviors. And interestingly, as I've got looked back at my own childhood and get to having got my own teenage boys who I look at and go, gosh, and think, oh, I can see that I did some of the same risky things in without even the knowledge of the risk there. So, okay, on the next couple of slides are just talking about some of the mechanisms that happen. So, another thing that happens during this restructuring of an adolescent brain, is this concept called synaptic pruning. And what this is, a child, and I would see this as a teacher teaching very young children, will often, soak up all the information. They'll learn everything there is to learn. They're interested in all the things. They don't really have anything that they're truly, passionate about. They just love everything. And they like to, they're inquisitive and they're curious. And what that does is they grow these dendrites, which are these connectors between the different brain cells or the neurons. Now, what happens around adolescence is the brain wants to become more streamlined. I love the thought of kind of going from a grassy path to a superhighway. And so the brain will start to prune back. So imagine like a tree with all the branches. The brain will prune back any of the connections that are not being used. And that's what's I another kind of really interesting fact is, so a child has had all of these growing kind of connections, and then they get pruned back, and that's when you start to see the wrinkles in the brain. So these are the good wrinkles, but that's what's happening. It's the pruning back. It doesn't have as many anymore, and the connections are becoming stronger. So this is called synaptic pruning. And on the next slide, this may be something that people are more familiar with, is the use it or lose it principle. So that is synaptic pruning, which I've just mentioned. So the things that get used the most, they get the stronger connections. The things that aren't being used anymore, those skills, or they get pruned away. And so you see that children maybe do start to become more interested in certain sports, or maybe other things. However, I would also challenge that what we do is we pour into the children, and we give them the opportunities to use the parts of their brain that are going to serve them best, throughout the rest of their lives. Often I will say to the students, if you are playing on Fortnite for 5 hours a night, you're using those parts of your brain that will, and that's they're the parts that will get stronger, and you'll build those connections. And you want to make sure that the children aren't losing the connections of the things and the skills, like these executive function skills. We want to give these children the opportunities to do that. And then on the next slide, an extension of that is kind of this neuroplasticity. Sometimes you may hear if it fires together, it wires together. And this is just this incredible mechanism of the brain. So it creates these new pathways, modifies existing ones in response to behavioral, environmental, and neural changes. Now, this is partly why, an adult may be trying to, learn a language in, their mid-40s. Well, they'll be able to do it. There's neuroplasticity. It isn't just something that is solely about adolescence, but in this restructuring of an adolescent brain is when neuroplasticity is really prominent, and that's why they are able to learn the languages much faster. So that's neuroplasticity. Next part I want to touch on is dopamine, and dopamine is something that you know, kind of in the world right now, a lot of people are talking about. I see a lot of this, you know, out there in social media and research papers. So dopamine is a naturally occurring chemical. And when I ask people, you know, what do you think, what is it dopamine does? I hear, you know, it's the feel good chemical, or it's the pleasure chemical. And it's also a lot to do with motivation. And what this looks like is, you know, we know that these social media platforms are there to kind of drip feed dopamine, to make us feel good, to make us compulsive users of these, you know, apps or platforms. But what actually starts to happen is that you may, I'm going to speak personally here. So I sometimes might come home from a long day at work and sit on my sofa and say, okay, I'm just going to watch a few of like videos. I'm going to scroll a little bit and then I'll go make dinner. And then 10 minutes turns to 20 minutes, turns to 30 minutes. And before I know it, I've lost maybe 45 minutes of my evening because I've been sitting just scrolling and watching things. Now, I don't come away from that with those dopamine hits feeling good. You know, if anything, I feel terrible. I feel like I've just wasted my evening or my afternoon. But it's dopamine is that motivation. That's the thing that drives me to do something. Now, adolescent brains, they actually produce more dopamine than adult brains, and they're more sensitive to dopamine. And so if they, I'm going to use an example, say they eat a piece of chocolate cake, you know, they maybe feel dopamine, but their brains would experience that differently because of the different dopamine that they have in their brains. And again, this is why, you know, I love talking about adolescent brains, because they are so unique. And so that's a little bit about dopamine. And when I go in and speak to students, they all kind of, they can tell me a bit about dopamine. I think it's definitely filtering down from a scientific level into schools. And so they'll often say it's reward or it's feel good. So, you know, it's definitely something that they are talking about. And unfortunately, so on the next slide, this concept of dopamine is absolutely being capitalized by most of the big tech companies. So I saw a quote recently that said the smartphone is almost the modern day hypodermic needle, because as a society, we are bombarded with all of this high dopamine stimulation, and it's very orchestrated. It's very intentional. And so we're just left constantly craving more. But an adolescent who has got, you know, this growing brain, who's more susceptible and sensitive to dopamine, you know, it's hard sometimes to know how to protect them from these companies who are, you know, intentionally making very, very addictive apps. Here's a thing that, you know, really struck a chord with me, that, you know, often parents will feel like they have to give their child a smartphone to keep them safe. But we're learning that the truth is very, very different. And in the later part of this presentation, I'll kind of give some stats on what children are actually being exposed to and what they are seeing when they've got smartphones. So yes, it's very, very concerning. And then onto the next slide. This is a very controversial topic. So this is a gentleman who began his career. His name is Ramsey Brown. He began his career as a neuroscientist studying brains, studying dopamine, and was very interested in, you know, how they can manipulate dopamine levels in brains. And so what he did, he had an organization called Dopamine Labs. This was out in California. And they studied it and then sold what they knew about dopamine. And they sold all this information and data to the tech companies. So the tech companies knew exactly which things and which kind of workings of an app or workings of a game would actually increase dopamine. And then they knew they were the things that they had to put more. They had to put more of that into the game or into the platform. So they were studying things to do with dopamine during things like gambling. And they would then choose those gambling techniques and integrate them into the apps and the games to make people more addicted to them. So Dopamine Labs got rebought out many, many times. It's very controversial. This isn't the only person who was doing this. Unfortunately, there are, you know, there have been researchers and scientists who study children, and they hook them up to, you know, oxygen measurements and, you know, heart monitors to see what it is that, you know, it triggers this dopamine or triggers this emotional response. And then they're the things that they put more in. So It's no longer called Dopamine Labs. I think it maybe got bought out three or four times. But definitely, what people know about dopamine isn't always being used for good. It's being used to, filter into these apps and platforms, which, is really quite scary to think how intentional they're working.
And you've mentioned Fortnite a couple of times and gaming, and I know that we've had clients over the years and friends too that had teenagers with gaming addictions. That's a real, real thing. Like there is treatment for gaming addictions in adolescence. It's not just adults gambling or something like that. So that is definitely a real thing. I had girls and they weren't that into gaming. I know that a lot of the guys are. So, but that is definitely a real thing. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
And we typically see, in schools and in adolescents now, girls are more kind of gravitating towards social media, and the boys, it's more gravitating towards gaming, especially at middle school level is what we typically see. But yes, and things like Fortnite are incredible. They are never ending games. There's never a conclusion to some of them. They just keep going and going and going. So, and children's growing brains can't discern that, and so they just want to keep going and going and getting those dopamine hits.
But it's also true for the girls in the social media too, and how they're getting wrapped up, and also the just the lack of self-worth and all of the other things and perpetual, there's so much bad stuff that's going on there that's keeping them all upset and anxiety on the rise, depression, self-harm, some of these other things. And this fear of missing out, watching everybody post all this fabulous stuff on their socials and stuff like that. And then they start feeling like they don't measure up. It's tough. It's really tough.
Absolutely. And some of the algorithms, so these computer coding that's, AI generated. So for a girl who joins, say, Instagram at 13, an algorithm is set to push beauty products at them. And I go in and speak to students, I go and speak to middle school girls, and I say, hey, who here has heard of Drunk Elephant? And they all go, because it's one of the things at TikTok, very cute packaging, it's targeted, it's pushed towards the girls. And I spoke to a lady who works at a very well-known skincare establishment in Houston. And she shared with me that she said, I wish somebody would sue TikTok because they have had so many girls coming into their stores buying these Drunk Elephant products with these anti-aging chemicals in that are so, so strong, like way too strong for 11, 12-year-old girls' skin. And she said, I have seen so many with permanent skin damage. So girls who are going in with chemical burns because they are seeing this content, they are feeling that comparison, or I need to have this, or I need to look like this. And so they are feeling compelled to go and purchase these products that, and again, without the prefrontal cortex that's there to kind of think about risk or, is there any danger to this? They are doing these things. And parents, unfortunately, I put a slide at the end, parents, unfortunately, underestimate kind of what these children are absorbing. And, it really is challenging their self-worth and their value. And, they think they have to have all of the same things. So it's really, really, it can get very emotional when I speak to a lot of these children and find out what it is that they're constantly having to, deal with and trying to get through. And so this on the screen is just, this can be something you can read. I won't talk too much about it, but this is an example of what the scientists who study dopamine look at. This was based on B.F. Skinner, was a very, very famous psychologist who they studied this in animals. And so a lot of these tech companies use these compulsion loops, is the term for them, and they put them into the apps and games to make children very addicted to them. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about that. You feel free to, research, read a bit more. We got accustomed with the Anxious Generation book through Jonathan Haidt, and we are an aligned organization with Jonathan Haidt. We're on his website because a lot of what he talks about in his book, and this is a really great book if anybody wanted to read up a little bit more, lots of studies, lots of information, but he really has brought it down to like a parental level. There's been a lot going on with research papers, but so we talk a lot about him. We talk about things like TikTok brain. This was something I was seeing in my classroom, students who were watching so many short videos, their brains were being so conditioned to only be able to cope, you know, with maybe 30, 40 seconds of information. And then I'm trying to teach a complex math topic that requires, you know, this sustained attention. And these students were really struggling. And because they are watching TikTok video, you know, often they're on autoplay. I heard a really nice conversation earlier about how, you know, when a child goes into TikTok, it's like they just walked into the beginning, like a party. You know, the party's all ongoing, everything fun's happening. You know, they entice these children in. And so when they're in there, they're just watching and getting that dopamine hit and dopamine hit and dopamine hit. And then these children really struggle in the classroom because it requires, you know, concentrating, greater focus, and, you know, teachers aren't teaching in these short little like stages. Instagram, so these platforms, they actually do something with this variable reward. So Instagram will withhold likes. So you don't see real-time likes. You see the likes that Instagram have decided when they give them to you, because they like to keep hold of them to manipulate dopamine. So people feel disappointed if nobody likes, comments, or shares their content. And then when they go back in, they all of a sudden see they've got, you know, a huge number of likes, and it's that dopamine dump. So really very interesting. So
You
these,
have just, I absolutely didn't know that they are doing that, because these kids are definitely following likes or reds or unreads and some of these other things. They left me on red. I hear that. I had no idea that they withhold some of that stuff. That's really scary. That's
it
it's
is
terrible.
really.
And some people are having major emotional issues already.
Yes,
So.
absolutely. Well, and you know, children will determine their value based on how many likes they have, followers, you know, and it's this real anxiety that has been orchestrated by these apps. Like, it's intentional. They
Oh, we
knew what
got you
they were doing.
frozen for a second. I hope you can
Oh,
hear us.
I can. Am I back? Oh, yeah, I was just saying this is very
Yes,
orchestrated.
I think so. Yeah, good.
It's very orchestrated by a lot of the tech companies. It's very intentional. Like, there's no surprise, you know, when I go in and tell the students about these things, and they're always, oh gosh, like, how do you know this? I'm like, because if you research and find the papers, and you know, it was made this way. Snapchat, you know, things like the Snap Streak, they actually have this new AI kind of you thing that you can do on Snapchat now with the solar system, where by how many times you snap a friend, it puts you in a solar system. And if you're closest to the sun, then you're the best friend. It's like so they're judging friends on it. The thing is, with these children, they're so vulnerable to this. So as adults, we may think, gosh, this is just totally ridiculous. But for these children, it's real. Like, it's real anxiety. It's a real thing that they're working towards. I had a student who told me the other day that he had 1,300 notifications a day. 1,300. And this was because he was maintaining his kind of presence on Instagram. He was on Snapchat. He was messaging. I was like, gosh. And this whilst he's at school. So you can see what these children are actually up against. It's really very phenomenal. I know I'm coming short to time, and I know people will get the slides. I didn't want to spend too much time on the smartphone risks. I feel like a lot of people are very aware of what a lot of the smartphone risks are. What is concerning are the statistics, and the Jonathan Haidt book is kind of a nice culmination of lots of those. He talks a lot about what he's been seeing with students. He's been doing a lot of research, like internationally, not just in the US. There are so many things that these children are often exposed to, and I mentioned, you know, parents will maybe believe that their child is safe because they're in their bedroom and they know where they are. But what we really try and do is educate for a parent to understand the kinds of things that children are being exposed to. The average age that a child is exposed to pornography now is around 8, and the average age that a child, and that's like, that's an accidental exposure, but the average age a child will then seek out the same kind of content is about 9. And this is getting younger and younger. It's hidden in YouTube Kids. It's hidden in all kinds of, you know, it will may look like claymation, like a cute Peppa Pig video, or I've had a friend who's actually seen something really shocking on what was a Frozen video, but very sexualized content. And so, you know, parents may often think, well, it's okay, they're on YouTube Kids, but I would encourage people to research YouTube Kids, because predators will find a way around to get things and content in front of your child. Something that's been talked about a lot, there's actually a Houston task force now, is sextortion. These are AI bots targeting teenage boys. These teenage boys are being coerced into sending intimate videos or pictures of themselves, and then the AI bot will then say, okay, you need to give me $500, otherwise I'm going to send this picture to everybody in your phone book. I'm going to send it to everybody at school. And I know somebody personally who's this happened to their daughter. She is an eighth grader at a middle school. And so that was incredibly shocking for me, because I spent a lot of my time reading about it and learning about it. But then to hear that it happened to somebody who I and my children knew personally was just horrifying. So this is something that's happening, and we're going to be talking through our Smart Families content over the next year. We're going to be talking about that too. Cyberbullying, this typically peaks around middle school. This is the, you know, with the prefrontal cortex not quite maturing and coming online, and the limbic system. These children, you know, hide behind this screen of anonymity. They think that they can say things online and it's not going to have any, you know, effect in the real world. This is where we see a lot of this at middle school. Lots of people saying things on things like Discord, Fortnite. Group texting is a huge issue. Group texting where people can be added and taken away. There's some really sad things going on in a group texting scenario. So we would always encourage parents to be very mindful. You know, encourage, does your child need to be in that group text? Some of these group texts are huge because they add. And then once these other children are being added anonymously, I mean, you don't really know who it is that anymore who's in this group text. So that's kind of the cyberbullying side. And then on the next slide, just some statistics, and we can fly past this one. You can see this from the slides that you can download, just really some of the results from cyberbullying. It can be incredibly painful for children, you know, to be on the receiving end of this, especially when, you know, the child that's doing the cyberbullying said, you know, I didn't know, or I thought they were okay. And, you know, it's just that, you know, that immature growth of the prefrontal cortex, you know, and peer pressure. Sometimes children say things because all their other friends are saying. So we talk a lot in our organization about being, you know, don't be the bystander, be an upstander. What does that mean? It takes courage to be that person who, you know, may stand in and say, hey, that's not right. And also teaching kids the tools, teaching them the refusal skills, like how do you say no? Role play that with your child. You know, don't just assume that they'll know how to do that. Practice it with them, so that when they are faced with the situation, they know what to say.
And I also think too, Bark will show you that sadly, sometimes it's your kid that's the bully, you know, that, you know, they need some guidance, and that way it's maybe they're being bullied, but maybe your kid's being the bully, and, you know, and recognizing that and nipping those things and seeing that, I think Bark helps let you know if there's kind of crazy talk coming out of your kid that maybe shouldn't. And you know, back to Bark, they're looking at vulgarity, they're looking at drug use, sexual content, bullying. I mean, all of your pinpoints, your sticking points are their sticking points. And that's what makes those so good. They'll notify you, because nobody could possibly keep up with 1,300 notifications a day and have a full-time job and be a parent and all the other things. But that's why Bark just brings your attention to the details that matter the most, the ones that you might need to address with your kids.
You know, a personal story. So we have the Bark, we have a Bark, before the Bark phone, we had Bark software on an iPad. And one of my son's friends had sent a text with a cuss word in. And my son's response was, dude, my mum can read this. And then I got the screenshot and got it sent to me. And I was like, yeah, there's a win, because my kids know, like, you know, I trust your intentions, but I don't trust the part of your brain that's not fully developed yet. And so you're going to encounter these situations. And it's, you know, part of me being your prefrontal cortex is that I am going to monitor things that are incoming, not just outgoing. Like, I need to protect you. This is just about unrestricted access to your children, about those predators who are gaining access to children. Like, please don't allow devices in bedrooms. Often some of the scariest things that happen where children don't feel like they have any options or any avenues for help is when, you know, parents have gone to bed and they are in the bedroom, and maybe they are messaging back and to somebody's threatening them, they're receiving something. And it's when they feel more isolated and less likely to go and seek help. Also just very concerning that how many people, young children, actually do talk to people on social media or, chat rooms. And then the alarming statistic of the children who actually then do go and meet them. I know of, she was a head teacher in the UK. This is a principal of an elementary school. And they had a student who was groomed on Roblox. And she was a fifth grader and she actually left school, got on a bus and went to meet this person. And thankfully there was it was a successful ending. There was an intervention, but it really does happen. It's not just these scary stories we hear in the news. Like it happens, around us a lot more than people, I think, sometimes realize. And please let me know about time, Alison. I know I'm not sure if we have a hard stop. I can just flick through these or I can leave people to look
Yeah,
through them on the
we
slide.
are kind of out of time for today. So if you can hit the highlights. I know that this has been very good, and like I said, near and dear to my heart. Definitely went through a lot of this. So help us hit the highlights on this, and then we'll wrap up for today.
Absolutely. So, something that was very interesting to me in the classroom was this concept, which is a new concept to me, which is sensory deficit. And there's a lot of information coming out now about what sensory deficit is. This is because children are not having developed vestibular systems in the same way that they were many years ago when they were swinging and, rolling and twirling. And so that can cause some issues in the classroom with the children who are fidgety and, who find it hard to focus. I would notice children who couldn't track from the board to the, and so this sensory deficit is getting a lot of momentum. A lot of people are starting to research that, and it's just very interesting with the interaction between technology, so kind of social skills. And then I can skip past the mental health. Feel free to read these. I think everybody knows it's, extremely concerning. This is the vestibular system. And I'll just finish by kind of, I know I've probably talked about a lot of doom and gloom and think, oh my goodness. No, there are amazing resources out there. I would point, we have things available on Smart Families. There is Screen Strong, an incredible resource. They have lots of information available. Protect Young Eyes, there's Parents That Fight. There are lots of organizations. This QR code will take you to our webpage. We have newsletters that you can download. We do monthly webinars, which are open enrollment. So you can sign up for, to get notifications and emails from our website, and we will let you know when we're doing webinars. They happen every month. We have those ones where we show you, bark phones, and we'll show you how to lock down devices. We have those there too. You can email me, ask questions. We just want to be here to help in the best way that we can. So I know I've kind of flown through all of this. This is my bread. Like, this is the thing that I can talk about all day long too. So you can see my email on the screen. I just want to thank everybody for taking, their lunch to come and listen to this presentation. And then if my last, I guess, final piece is, just keep the communication going. It can feel very uncomfortable for parents to have these hard conversations, especially if you were a, if your parents didn't have them with you, it can be really hard to have those conversations. But these children need to have these conversations. You are the best person to have them with them. Like, so thank you all very much. And thank you, Alison, for having me on.
I love the information that you have provided, and the guidance on how to lock these phones down is good. And you guys will need it. It is challenging, even for the smartest of folks. It's tough. And getting a list, whether it's from Smart Families or Crime Stoppers, getting that list of those apps that you should watch out for. New ones are popping up every day. You might think you have a good hold on it. Next week you don't. It's crazy. So getting a hold of those and kind of knowing what those are will be really, really helpful. But thank you, Sally. We're going to do this again. It was wonderful. Thanks for being with us here today. Everybody is going to get a copy of today's slides and a link to the recording, and it'll have her contact information. It'll also have her QR code and our QR code for scheduling an initial appointment. It'll also have a link for any upcoming webinars and topics that we have coming up over the next couple of months. So thanks everyone for being here today. Certainly our pleasure, Sally. Thank you. I love your passion, and we'll look forward to partnering with you again soon.
Wonderful. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Alison.
Take care. Bye now.